This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President, simplifying a complex money world with investment programs to match a range of investment goals and life situations. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our May 15th, 2017 edition of Invest Talk. And as always, we are here to help you become an above average investor, break away from the mistakes that plagues almost every retail investor out there. And it is our belief that the average investor can eliminate some of the missteps that trip them up. We talk about how you can avoid making these costly mistakes as you invest for your future financial independence, because that's really what our goal is. Everyone talks about retirement, etc., but it's really about having financial independence, doing what you want to do with your life, not having being constrained by the lack of money that you have. Now today, making the best of low-risk investments. That's one of our talking points. We're going to highlight a few that are out there and maybe others that may be touted as low-risk but really aren't. So we're going to discuss that. We welcome your question, however, along the way. And we answer questions about the topics that we bring up as well as topics that you just have on your mind. It could be about anything money-related. So our listener line is open at 888-99-CHART. That's our anytime line. We are live 4 to 5 Pacific time each and every weekday, but you can call after hours, leave a message, and we'll answer on the next program. Now let's take a moment to announce our upcoming InvestTalk Wealth webinar. These free hour-long webinars give us a chance to focus our attention for a full hour on a topic that requires some time to really dig deep into. You know, on the show, we kind of brush over the details because it's difficult to get into the weeds, shall we say, on the show each and every day, because there's a lot of details that go into what we're talking about, the information that we're giving, and a lot of times it requires some explanation. And there's probably no aspect of investing that generates more interest that we hear than real estate. There are more than 5 million homes sold last year, new and existing, so it's a huge market. And this doesn't include commercial or multi-family income housing as well. So if you're an individual who's thinking about acquiring income property or thinking about maybe buying and selling property for profit, this could be a very profitable way to invest an hour. We're calling it Real Estate Investing, the Basics of Residential Real Estate Investing, scheduled for Wednesday, May 31st, the last day of this month, from 6:30 p.m. Pacific time to 7:30 p.m. Now, this one is perfect for the hands-on investor who really wants to explore the profit potential of residential real estate investing. And in this market, it's especially important to really understand what to look for, the specifics, so that you can make a decision that makes sense long-term. We're really in an environment where you really have to be choosy when it comes to real estate investing, and knowing the details is very, very important. So I'm going to be hosting this. I am a licensed real estate agent along with one of my partners in that area, investor Chevy Axon. So we'll show you how you need to, what you need to know to be a successful investor in a very competitive marketplace. So here's your chance to see how professional investors analyze real estate opportunities. We're going to go over how to succeed with long-term rentals, you know, buy and holds. Also, what about vacation rentals? That's a hot market right now, and there's some pros and cons that go with that market, and it's an area that you really need to have your eyes wide open for. And so we're going to discuss that in details. And then we're going to look at some current market opportunities that are out there for sale right now today that you could potentially invest in, and show how we would go about looking at the various aspects and analyzing whether it's a good market opportunity or not and who is best fitted for that type of property. And we're going to go over probably 3 to 5 of those as well. So we're going to learn, hopefully we'll help you learn the tools and strategies that the professionals use to give you insights to help you reduce risk, mask, and maximize your investing dollar. So whether you're getting started or currently own rental properties, this webinar will shed light on how professionals look at investing in real estate and give you a blueprint for success. So to join us, you can sign up on investtalk.com. It's going to be May 31st, 6:30 to 7:30 Pacific time. Like I said, it is free. All you have to do is register. You can do that right now on investtalk.com. Now, do you have a question about real estate investing, stock market investing, bond market, maybe the commodities market, options, futures? You can get through right now. We'll take your call in a couple of minutes. 888-99-CHART is how you get through. 888-992-4278. Now let's go to Noel in Napa. How you doing, Noel?
Good, Justin. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested, not in real estate today, but I'm kind of favoring right now tech stocks, and one that has my interest is OCLARO, I guess it is, symbol OCLR.
Okay.
I'm interested in it because of the business, the line of business they're in the tech area.
Okay. Let's see what they do. They're engaged in providing laser, optical components, modules, and subsystems for the telecommunications and data communications equipment companies. Can you delve into their technology a little bit? It sounds like you have some insight on what that technology is, maybe with a little more specifics.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like...
Oh, you're asking me?
I'm asking you, yeah. I mean, I haven't heard of them,
Oh, yeah.
So I have
done
a brief description.
A lot of research into it specifically, but it's just that I like the fact that they're into optics and that sort of thing, and that's going to be greatly in demand in the tech area. So that's why I like them.
Yeah, I got you. That makes sense that you're trying to find something that's maybe a secular trend, right? Something that's not going to...
And it's going to be a buy and hold long-term thing.
Yeah.
Last year they moved up considerably, and I suspect they have a bright future ahead of them, I would suspect. I just thought I'd get your insight.
Well, the numbers are certainly moving.
And what you thought might be a good entry price to go in and for a buy.
Well, the numbers are certainly moving in the right direction. Right, your revenues are moving up somewhere in the neighborhood of 50% annualized, but that's only really happened over the past year or so. About September 2015, the revenue was down 2% year over year, and from then on, you've had pretty much a ramp higher quarter over quarter, and this last quarter, revenue grew 60% year over year. So this is certainly something new. And what I would want to know is, why is this? I know you're going to say, well, the industry's doing great. Well, the industry overall, you know, lasers and this stuff was ramping up, I'm sure, before the last year. So did they come out with a new product? Do they have a technology that's different than their competitors? Because I'm sure they're not the only one in this space. So I would look at what other companies are in this space. Like I said, I've never heard of this company. I like that you have interest in it, and that's good, but I would need to dig a little deeper, especially in technology, because they could have come out with a product and it did well for a year, but a competitor can see what they're doing, put a little R&D in that, and come up with a better product, maybe at a cheaper price, or maybe just simply a better product, and that steals market share. So I need to do a little more digging into the industry, understand who their competitors are, where they sit in the space. Okay, so
I like that suggestion. I'll do that.
Yeah. So the numbers are moving in the right direction, and that's That's A number one. That's why I'm saying maybe you're on to something. Now, it's certainly kind of gone sideways since last October, right? Last October hit $9 a share, and it's pretty much it's traded between $11 and $7 a share since then, and now it's at $9.13. So it's really not gone nowhere over the past 6 months or so, 7 months, I guess almost a year close to now. But this could also just be a consolidation after the big move, right? It was in 2014, it was as low as $2, a dollar a share, dollar and change, and moved all the way up to 10 since then. So is this a consolidation is my question. And my hunch is it is. But I really need to dig into the specifics of the industry, and then I'd go from there. But I like the trend. I like where you're looking at. There's nothing wrong with getting into it around the $8 level. It seems like there's a lot of good support there. But I would really need to do a deeper dive into the industry and their competitors before I get super excited and say, oh, I'm going to hold it long term.
Yeah, okay. I appreciate your suggestions, and it makes a lot of sense. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to get right on that.
All right.
Process.
I appreciate the call, and good luck with it. Now, I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. This is our Monday edition of Invest Talk. Why not take our 3-minute risk analysis tool? It's fast and free, and it's there for you on investtalk.com. 888-99-CHART is our live listener line every weekday from 4 to 5 Pacific time. So you get through and ask your question on today's show. Our main talking point is about making the best of low-risk investments, and I'm going to highlight a few and tell you why they could be good, and others that maybe seem like they're low-risk, but in reality, they're not quite as they're lower risk, but they're not low risk like a lot of people like to think they are. Then I also have some other ones as well. How to avoid costly mistakes with these four investing rules. And is Donald Trump boosting the economy? And really, if you look into the data, there's a lot of mixed signals. And I'm going to go over what those are. And then lastly, what are earnings looking like? Earnings expectations. We've Q1 had a pretty good earnings season. A lot of that had to do with the rebound in oil prices. So if you look a year ago where oil prices were in the first quarter of 2016 and where they are in the first quarter of this year, you'll see a big change year over year, a big increase. And so that helped kind of turn around the profit dive that you saw after oil prices really plummeted in 2015, right? And you had a slow comeback throughout last year. So I'm going to talk about all of those things, but ultimately I want to know what's on your mind. 888-99-CHART is our number to get through and ask your question this hour. And I always urge everyone to get your call in sooner rather than later. Now, the S&P was up 11, the Dow was up 85, and the NASDAQ was up 28 today. It was another, a modest up day. We had a good open, and the market kind of traded sideways from there. So not a whole lot of movement, and we're pretty much past earnings season for the most part, and getting into summer. And summer typically brings volatility. And I'm expecting that. It's probably not this month. I don't think it's really going to start this month. But I'm thinking possibly June. But really I'm eyeing July as that month where volatility is probably going to kick back up in a more protracted way. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me right now. 4 to 5 Pacific time. Any money questions are welcome right now. Let's go to Kit in San Diego. How you doing, Kit?
Hi, fine, Jason. Justin, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it.
Looking to refinance my mortgage on my home, and a couple of questions for you.
Sure.
Is that important? Like for example, a big, well-known bank, or versus a small, relatively unknown lender? Does that really matter?
No, not really, because even if that lender goes under, doesn't mean that you suddenly don't pay the mortgage, right? That mortgage is just going to be sold to somebody else. There's going to be somebody servicing that loan. Now, how you pay it and the ease of paying it and et cetera, that might be a worry or something to consider if you get annoyed by processes of making a payment that aren't that clean or that easy. But in today's day age, you can almost always pay online somehow. So really who the lender is doesn't matter to you, because someone else is probably going to be servicing that loan anyway.
Okay. All right. And if something does happen, well, the second part, I guess the question is, if it is sold, if that loan is sold or serviced by another lender, can the terms of the loan change?
No, the terms, it's a contract. So the terms of the loan cannot change, and they have to adhere to those terms. So you just want to make sure the terms of the contract are what you want and you're getting the best rate possible in today's market. So that's really all you need to consider.
Okay. All right. Great.
No problem,
kid. Thank you very much.
No problem. Thanks for calling in. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through to ask your question on today's show. We have about 30 minutes left, but it's going to go by quick, so get your call in quickly. Now, there's a lot of low-risk investments out there, and there's a bevy of retirees that are entering a phase where they're looking for returns, but they don't want to take a lot of risk. And in this market, with interest rates near 0%, it becomes very, very hard to find investments that give you some sort of return, but also don't expose you to a ton of risk. Now, a lot of people think dividend-paying stocks are a good way to find return, decent return, with low risk. And I have a big problem with that. And the main reason is not that I don't like dividend paying stocks. I love dividend paying stocks, right? We have, I would say, the majority of the equities that we own for clients today pay some sort of dividend. Not all of them. In our balanced income program, they do. But in aggregate, not all of them pay dividends, but I would say most do. So I have nothing against dividend paying stocks. However, my issue is that a lot of people view them as low-risk investments. Now, are they lower risk than the average, say, small-cap stock that doesn't pay a dividend? For the most part, yeah. They tend to be lower risk. But that doesn't mean low risk. Okay? And I see this a lot, and people are putting their money in dividend ETFs and dividend mutual funds, and they think that's low risk. And the reality is, it's not. It's not low risk. It's just lower risk. So understand, if the equity markets go down, say 30%, right? S&P goes down 30%. If you think a dividend ETF is going to mean that you're not going to lose much, you're probably very wrong, right? One of the most popular dividend-paying ETFs, VIG, the Vanguard Dividend Appreciation Fund, in 2007, it hit a high of $59.16 a share. Well, in the low in 2009, it was $30 a share. Okay, so a high of 59, a low of 30. Basically went down 50%. Now, the S&P went down somewhere in the neighborhood of 55%. Over that time period. But you can see that the dividend shielded some of the risk, but by no means did it shield even the majority of the risk. So don't think that dividend paying stocks are low risk. They are just a little bit lower risk than your typical equity holding. And it also depends on what type of dividend paying stocks you're talking about too. Utilities are going to be a lot lower risk than, say, a dividend payer that is in the tech space, for example, right? For example, XLU was hit a high of $44 in 2007. Its low was about $22. So actually, it was pretty close to the same type of risk as overall. But in general, they tend to be less risk than the average dividend payer. Okay. Then you go to CDs. CDs are certainly great, but these are great only for near-term focused time horizons. They're not great long-term investments. You don't want to lock up your money in a CD that's 10 plus years or anything like that. But if you're looking to buy a house in 2 years or 3 years, putting that money into a CD over those next year to 3 years might be a good way to go. Then you have treasury securities. Those are also certainly low risk as well. Nothing wrong with that, although you don't want to go too far out in the duration spectrum. My favorite, however, are money market accounts. Money market accounts, super liquid, and you get something above what a savings account is giving you. Now, don't forget, we need you to do some of the talking. Let's hear your money question or investing experience. This is Invest Talk. Give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues next. First, a couple of words for KPP Financial and your 401k. Many of our clients and listeners are invested in their employer's 401k plan, and in the past, it's been very difficult to provide timely information and suggestions for these types of accounts. Well, here's a program that changes that. It's called Active 401k, and it helps you take a proactive approach to managing your employer's retirement program. Here's how it works. Active 401k ranks your current 401k investment options within your employer's specific plan based on current trends and long-term performance. And then it builds a portfolio that fits your personal risk tolerance, selected from the plan's available options. If you'd like to know more about it, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Investments tab, and then look for Active 401k. Now let's get back to the podcast. Now it's time for your call. 888-99-CHART is the number for InvestTalk. And if you're listening online today, you can sign up for the weekly KPP Premium Newsletter right now. Try it for a month, and if you're not really enthused about it, we'll give you a refund. Just look to the left column of investtalk.com.
Let's go to John in Vancouver. How are housing prices up there?
Well, we're doing okay in Vancouver because we're pretty well on and paying off our house, so we're doing okay here.
Okay, that's good. I'm hearing some horror stories, but go ahead.
Yeah, I have a question about the ETF GUSH. It's advertised itself as a leveraged bull fund.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering how those work and how they leverage, and if you have the same downside risk as them advertising being a 3x upside.
So this is GUSH. So this is 3x bullish or bearish? Bullish, correct?
Bullish, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine as a trading vehicle. Does it have decent volume, though? What's the volume? Average. Okay, I was 586,000. So the volume's fine. Yeah, there's definitely more downside. Are you familiar with tracking error and leveraged ETFs?
No, and that's kind of where my kind of question comes in, yeah.
Yeah.
So, how that all works and how much exposure you're putting yourself out there when you start doing things like that.
Any leveraged ETF is going to have what is called tracking error. And that's just a mathematical computation of when, you know, it loses value, it's harder for it to make up, right? And over time, it comes a tracking error within the ETF. And the more volatile it is, I mean, more days that are kind of up and down and up and down, the more tracking error there tends to be. And over time, they're terrible buy and hold vehicles. Any leveraged ETF is only a trading vehicle. Now it could be a swing trade for a week or 2 weeks or maybe 3 weeks or something, but I would never hold a leveraged ETF for over a month, say, for example. Okay, so you can use it, but it's only a trading vehicle. You understand that?
Yeah, whereas other general energy or oil ETFs would be fine for holding for longer term.
Yeah, so you could go and buy OIH, for example, which is the oil services fund. You can buy XLE, right, for example, and that's just the whole energy space. You know, those are single lever. There's no leverage to them. They just own a basket of stocks within that particular industry, and that you can hold long term. And you'll collect dividends, et cetera. But the GUSH, G-U-S-H, that's simply a trading vehicle and nothing more. If you're trying to play a short-term rally in energy stocks, fine. But beyond that, they're useless vehicles. They're actually terrible things to invest in long-term.
All right, perfect. Thanks for your help.
That's no perfect. Problem, John. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Harold in Campbell. How you doing, Harold?
Hey, Justin. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
Wanted to get your opinion on, I'm thinking about taking a position in the semiconductor ETF, ticker SOXX.
Okay, so there's another leverage ETF that's just bearish semiconductors, correct?
Yes. Okay. I don't think it's a leveraged ETF.
Yeah, it is. It's 3x levered.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought it was just a regular ETF.
No, SOXS is. Yeah,
oh, I'm sorry. No, it's not. I'm sorry. It's SOXX.
Double X. Gotcha. Double X. SOXX. Okay, so this is SOXX. Okay, so this is long semiconductors.
Yes.
Right. Okay, so you're looking at the SOX and. You know, this is a space that's very hot right now, is strong momentum. And to me, this would be a momentum play. This is a rally that's long in the tooth. And where this turns, it's hard to know. But I suspect it's going to turn in the next month or two. Now, does it go from 143 to 153 in the next month or two? That's certainly possible because the momentum is very, very strong. But when this turns lower, it's going to turn violently lower. Anytime you have long rallies like this, I mean, you're at an all-time high in the semiconductor industry. It is parabolic on a monthly chart. You're taking extreme risk, okay? But this momentum can continue. It's very hard to know how long it will continue. But I do think this is where you'll see the first signs of the market kind of cracking. Or sorry, the final signs that the tech space is cracking. And so me, from a long-term perspective, this is a horrible place to be. From a short-term momentum perspective, you know, it could keep going. What's your time horizon, Harold?
I know valuations are high right now, but I'm actually thinking about, you know, a long-term hold and just ride it out because, you know, semiconductor industry is huge.
Yeah, but that's not a good way of thinking about it. You have to understand the risks, right? In 2007, this same index went from 71 to 23. Right, went down 60%. And when semiconductor industry turns, it tends to turn violently. And the reason is because it's a sector that is very high operating costs, right? Fixed operating costs. They have huge factories, and the expenses to carry these factories are very high. So when business is good, their profits soar, and that's what you're seeing right now. When business turns, it turns violently lower because their operating leverage is very, very high. So this is something that why it's at 143 now. Next recession, this is going well below $100 a barrel. This could go back down to $50, not a barrel, I'm sorry, well below $100 a share, and probably all the way down to maybe $50 a share. So you have to be able to withstand that volatility. Do you have that ability to withstand that type of volatility? Okay. So if you do, that's fine. I agree with you. Long-term semiconductors are going to do well. But from a long-term valuation entry point, this is not a good entry point. You're almost guaranteed to get a better entry point in the next 2 to 3 years. Because this will, the next recession, probably will come in the next 2 to 3 years, and you'll probably get a much better entry point. Now, you want to buy here and hold for 15 years? You'll probably be up, but you're going to have a ton of volatility in the meantime.
Okay.
Okay. So that's just what you got to go with your eyes wide open. You're buying near peak valuations, and you know, from I'm a value investor, and I run from these situations because I mean, this is something that's gone up. This has almost doubled in a little over a year. I just can't with good conscience buy this from a long-term perspective. Short-term trading perspective, momentum trading, sure. Could keep going another 5, 10% maybe. But from a long-term perspective, you're not getting a good price here.
Not a good entry point, you think?
No, not from a long-term perspective. Like I said, short-term momentum trading, sure. Long-term, absolutely not.
Okay, Justin. Next. Appreciate your advice.
Thanks for the call, Harold. Now, our Invest Talk Insider program is a source for up-to-the-minute news. So join up, become an Invest Talk Insider. Enjoy access to our library of webinars and a lot of other informational resources as well. It's free. Just go to investtalk.com, select the Invest Talk tab, and then Invest Talk Insider.
Our Invest Talk mission is to help you make better investing decisions. To do that on your own, thumbs up or thumbs down choices based on good, solid investing principles. But we need your questions to keep us on track. 888-99-CHART or click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
Hi, I had a question about option trading. I've researched options for a while, but I've actually never traded them myself. And I was looking at maybe some long-term puts for Tesla, and I wanted to get what you guys thought about that. I know it's a little more risky than just buying stocks and waiting and holding, but if you think maybe Tesla's going to go down, if that's a wise investment choice or not. All right, thank you. I really enjoy your guys' show, and keep up the good work. Bye.
Well, I do like your idea to – you basically want to short Tesla using options, right? You're buying puts, I'm assuming out-of-the-money puts. Long term, I like that you're going long term. That's something that you most beginner, novice option traders do. Is they tend to go short term, and what they're prognosticating for a particular stock doesn't happen within their time frame, and it's because they didn't go out far enough, and they got cheap, and they only bought near term options, and you know, a couple months go by, and what they thought was going to happen didn't happen. They lose all their money, right? And so always buying more time than you need is always the way to go. So I like that you're looking at buying long-term options. And when I'm saying long-term, I'm saying probably a year plus. He's trying to go basically short Tesla. And I 1,000% agree with it, because I do think Tesla will eventually go bankrupt probably in the next few years or so. But options are fraught with a lot of risk that you may not understand. So do make sure you do a lot of research. Like I said, go out farther than you're expecting. If you expect Tesla go down big in the next 6 months or year, probably go out 18 months or 2 years. Okay. If you think they're going to go out big, you don't need to go super close to the money. Buy strike of $200. And you know, if the market finally wakes up to the charade that Tesla is, and it goes below it's going to fall apart quickly, and it'll go below 200 pretty rapidly. So I have no problem with that. It's just buy a lot of time and do your research and make sure that you are comfortable with the risk. Because like I said, when you buy options, remember 85% of options that are purchased expire worthless. So really, you need to be careful with what you're purchasing. I'm a much bigger fan of option selling versus buying. 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Now, let's talk about four costly mistakes that you can avoid with these four investing rules. One is to avoid annuities. I think that's number one on this list, even though on this list it's number three. But I like it. I like this as number one. You know, annuities are rarely the answer. And they're usually a profit bonanza for insurance companies and those that are selling them, because the commissions are high, details are complex. And they always use the word guarantee often to close a sale. They make you feel safe, but in reality, the fees are very, very high and the upside is very, very low. Now, fixed annuities can be appropriate for very specific situations, but what happens is you lock up your money. If you die sooner than the insurance company expects, then the insurance company wins. If you live longer, then you likely win, but your money is still locked up and there's very little liquidity in those type of instruments. Variable annuities are kind of the cousin of mutual fund portfolios, and they always tout their tax-deferred benefits, but they don't talk about how the fees a lot of times are upwards of 3% annually, which is nothing that you should be ever paying. Also, next one is look for petty fees from your broker-dealer. Fees and commissions are coming down, so make sure that your broker, whoever you're with, is coming down with it, and they're not tacking on petty fees on top of that. Then also, the next is know your advisor. These are the basic rule for the basic rule for investment advisors is to know your client. We are required by the SEC to quote unquote know our client, and that's it's a general term, but we do need to have a process for that, and we do. But in theory, the reason for this rule is to ensure the advisor is providing appropriate advice to the client. But it's equally important for the client to know the advisor and make sure your advisor is appropriate for you. You need to know how they get paid and what potential conflicts of interest there are. And there are a ton in the industry. And that's one of the reasons why the DOL ruling is being fought so hard by the industry, is because there's so much money and conflict of interest that are embedded in the industry. And this will get rid of the vast majority of that. And this is great for the industry, but the bigger players in the industry, the ones who have lobbyists, don't want that, right? And that's why it's being pushed off. I still hope it gets implemented, and I think it will. Then lastly, when considering mutual funds, make sure to insist on no load funds, no sales charge. Never pay a sales charge on a mutual fund, because you begin with a 5% loss right up off the top. Or a lot of times they'll tell you it's nothing to get in, but it's a C share, so it's a back end loaded, and you, whenever you sell it, you got to pay 1 or 2% commission on the back end. Or you're buying a fund that has 12b1 fees, meaning the company that's, or the broker that's selling it to you, is getting a kickback consistently. See what I'm talking about with these conflicts of interest? Understand what you're buying. So focus on ETFs mainly, and maybe even ETFs that have no commission structure. And a lot of the big major houses, like we have TD Ameritrade, I think we have 101 no transaction fee ETFs. Look for those as well. Those are great in this environment. Now, you're listening to Invest Talk, and we want to hear from you. Your calls and questions and comments are our first priority. We can still fit your question in if you want. We have time, so give us a call. We only have about 8 minutes left in the show, and three of that's going to be eaten up by this commercial coming up. So give us a call, pick up the phone, we'll get you in on our last segment. 888-99-CHART. Let's go to Nick in Hayward. How you doing, Nick?
Hi, Justin. Great show. Thank you very much.
Thanks for making it.
I'm thinking of adding on to my position in General Electric. What do you think? It's 52-week low, and it has a dividend that's kind of decent, you know?
Yeah, the dividend is not bad, 3.4%, even though their payout ratio is pretty high. Their cash flow is a little bit of a worry for me. If you look at it, it's now negative about $7.5 billion, and their operating cash flow is negative as well, which is kind of worrisome. Oh. I would not be. I think this is, while it's near support, It is near support around the $27 area is pretty good support for the name. I just not liking the price action. Overall, the industrial space has been relatively strong since the Trump election, and GE is not going along with it, and I'm wondering why. And while long-term, I don't have a problem with it, I do think it's going to continue lower, and I think you'll have a better entry point somewhere in the next 2-3 years during the next recession. So I would not be a big buyer of GE. I think it could possibly go back down to $20 a share. That's where I'd that's where I would get interested in it. Yeah.
Okay. So I'll just wait then.
I would just wait, collect your dividend, and look for an entry point around $20.
All right. Thank you very much, sir.
No problem, Appreciate Nick. Thanks for calling. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So you get through and ask your question. We have 3 minutes left, so better pick up the phone. Now, is Donald Trump boosting the economy? And the big, the real answer is kind of, sort of, not really. While the labor market still is pretty good, if you look at the GDP figure, which came at the slowest pace in 3 years, and you hear from companies like American Express, which says they are hopeful in stronger economic growth, they just don't see any evidence of it right now. And this is coming from Jeffrey Campbell, who's their chief CFO, their chief financial officer. And, you know, Trump talks about deregulation and improved regulatory clarity. But the end result so far has been more, or I would say less clarity. If you talk to the CEOs, if you hear from the CEOs in their analyst calls, their earnings calls, few of them can point to examples of where the change in ideology is actually taking place. You know, he signed an executive order of eliminating two rules for every new regulation created, and that's great. I'm a fan of that. But the details on these reforms, like tax reform, for example, healthcare reform, even though it's passed in the House, it's not going to get passed in this form in the Senate, is still all up in the air. So we continue to see more promise and less action coming out of the White House. It sounds great, but the economic numbers that are coming out aren't jiving with the optimism that people have or businesses that are having around the Trump agenda. Because frankly, not much of the Trump agenda has actually been passed. Not much has really been passed in the House at all, except for the healthcare bill, which was going to die in the Senate. So we still remain in a slow growth economy, and don't even think about us possibly growing at 5% GDP like Trump says. It's just not possible for an extended period of time in our current demographics. Now, our hour is up. Thank you for listening and joining in. You can reach me directly with a question or comment. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Contact Steve button, or contact Justin, and I will get back to you. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein, chief executive officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for being with us.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.